Thank you. Well, do we have a Congress yet?
Yes.
Well, good. How are you making out, huh? Well, I have no doubt but what you'll be making out better after you've had some seminars. You realize they have upper end dock for the seminars this time. It was my idea. Just as an aside here, there is no real reason why we might not someday, in some far distant future, develop a group clearing technique. It's possible, not very probable, but possible. Results which are obtained in group intensives are quite excellent when very competent auditors are auditing, for instance, Spence and Dick, and I think Burke and one other auditor, Al, were in this last group intensive, and they did a very fine job. They really got somewhere. I don't know if you can see this or not, but that blue line is where they was, and that red line is where they went. So they did go somewhere on one of these graphs by reason of a group intensive. It's group processing shouldn't be undersold. It is an assist to clearing, but it is not itself clearing at this time. People only do a few thousand percent better after they've been group processed for a while, and we expect a more significant gain than that from clearing. Now, the whole idea of clearing people, getting off into a run here, the whole idea of clearing people is not making nothing out of them. And it really isn't setting them free. It's simply making them more capable and more able, and increasing in particular, watch this carefully, their creativeness. And increasing in particular their tolerance. There are four freedoms, we have been told from another decade. And these four freedoms were all very well, but they were not doable. We have four freedoms today in Scientology that are very doable. Clearing does not mean that the individual is free from this universe or its liabilities. It merely means he can cope with them. That's a little bit different from a standpoint of average man, you know. Well, we get somebody who can throw his shoulders back. Now, in clearing people, we do achieve these four freedoms, and I'll enumerate them for you here. They're freedom froms, I am afraid. The first one is illness. Now, that's quite remarkable, since illness has been considered an indoor sport here for a number of years. If you can't do anything else to get attention from somebody or to get out of something, you can always get sick. But medical science has been ending this rather rapidly. As a matter of fact, even Dianetics put a large dent into it. 70% of man's ills were psychosomatic. And a good auditor auditing out the right engrams got people well. Well, people who are clear don't get sick as often. That doesn't mean that you probably inject them with a tremendous number of bacteria, one kind or another, and the body would get sick. But the person wouldn't. I've had more clear say to me this. They say this to me. They say, the difficulties are very simple. The body is sick, and I'm not. I say, how do you feel? Fellas going around. Ooh, 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 ooh. I say, how are you doing? How do you feel? I feel great. I say, what's the matter? What's the matter? Well, the body has got a touch of flu or something, and I feel fine, but so on. Now, this means that bodies continue to be subject to such things as trains running into them and bacteria poured into them from the unwashed spoons of the cafe and such things. But to this illness is not added the perpetuation of the person himself. See, he doesn't perpetuate the psychosomatic aspect. All illness has a psychosomatic aspect. I believe that in operating Thetan at that level, you would be able to take a body and smash it up against the wall, and it would bounce down in good shape, and it would be in perfect condition. But that is a higher condition. We have not experienced that condition. And we're talking about clearing. I remind you, we're not talking about anything that we don't know about. I can only tell you what happens. Now, funny thing about it is you clear somebody, and for about 2-3 months after that, the body tries to get used to not having to be sick. And the guy goes around, and he starts shelving this and shelving that, and one day he gets up in the morning, and, all of a sudden the pneumonia he had 10 years ago goes, see, and he's perfectly all right. But the body goes through a period of readjustment there for about, I don't know exactly what the period is on the average, but as reported, it's about 90 days. After the person himself is clear, then the body starts clearing. See, all by itself. And I'm talking now, the body is clearing physiological aspects. It's straightening itself up physiologically, not mental physiologically. See? I don't know then whether or not it would be an immediate truth to say that the physical universe... Oh boy, am I telling you a lie now. I don't know if it would be true that the physical universe around the person would start to straighten up too. I can only tell you that very aberrated people have very aberrated machinery. Their machinery breaks down. You get the famous case that we always speak about, Joe Blow. You give Joe Blow a brand new car. Perfect condition. It has been adjusted within an inch of its nameplate on all factors and facets. He gets in the car, starter, the battery runs down. Batteries never run down before on any new car that just came out of the plant, but it ran down then. And he runs it for a few miles, and all of a sudden it's developed torsion steering. You go down to used car lot, you can actually take cars that have been owned by one owner, and you can diagnose the case state of their former owners. Now, in some underprivileged countries in the world that have been very badly beaten around, it is as much as your life's worth to leave a piece of machinery lying around for anybody to get at, because it'll go poof. It doesn't matter how many lend-lease tractors. It doesn't matter how much tonnage of equipment is poured into the country. It's going to break down. That's what you can say about it. During the war, it was quite interesting that tons and tons of butter were shipped to starving Russia, taken up on the Murmansk run at great expense of U.S. corvettes and British corvettes and German submarines. Remember, they were an expensive item, too. And when they arrived, why, the Russians used it to grease the tanks with. It's quite interesting. I'm not telling you anything now, I just dreamed up. They did. That's what they used our butter for. It tasted sweet. It didn't have any particular rancid flavor, and there were no hairs in it, and so they knew it wasn't butter. around. But butter under heat is not a good lubricant. If you've ever tried to fry steak or something like that in butter or on a skillet that's too hot, it burns. And so did the tanks. So it isn't exactly a mental aura we're talking about. You know, they actually do odd things. And one of the characteristics of aberration is to misuse equipment. You use a fork, not to eat with or turn things in the frying pan with, but to hold the door open with. And you go around some places, you'll find out that the equipment in the place is all misused one way or the other. Shoes are stored in the ice box and all kinds of things are occurring. But this is what you see in an underprivileged country that is rather aberrated on the average. That's what you see. But I'm not just talking about that when I talk about area of influence of a person. I'm actually talking about an esoteric, exotic, incomprehensible, not measurable sphere of calm that can surround somebody, or a sphere of confusion that can surround somebody, that actually affects the environment. I'm sure you've had a person who have come to see you. You've had other people come to see you, and everything was okay. When you put the dinner on the table, and they sat down, and everything, why, dinner got eaten, and everybody got up after, you know, and the dishes moved up, nothing got everyone. You had a nice evening, you know, nice dinner. And this person that we're discussing, however, comes to dinner. Now, they didn't even go near the stove, but for the first time in months, the rice boiled over, the soup burned, the best crockery fell on the floor. They weren't even near the kitchen. And they sit down to the table, you know, and half the things are missing, or there's too many of them. And they don't hit the plates, they hit the tablecloth, you get the idea. And halfway through dinner, there's a tremendous emergency that requires that you not finish dinner. There's just things go wrong. The one thing we could say about these people, things go wrong. And it doesn't physically, evidently, take anything to make them go wrong. They just do. Now, if we take the converse of this, there are people around whom things go right. Person moves in, things start going right. Person doesn't do anything, just things start going right. Get the idea? I can give you an example of that. I knew a young officer. I'm awfully hard on ensigns because they've cost me my life several times. And these few tiny little gray hairs up here, each one of them's an ensign. Failing to put ammunition aboard, failing to put the charts aboard, you know, that sort of thing. Telling the crew they could all have liberty 1 hour before sailing, you know, this sort of thing. But this young man came from California, of all things. You wouldn't expect it, but he did. And he was a rather plump, calm young fellow. And up to that time, the ship had never been able to get any supplies except if I myself would apply for them. But he walked aboard, and all of a sudden, we were wealthy. People just walk down the deck with 5-gallon cans of paint and hand them to us, you know. Or at the ammunition depot, they say, "You sure you've got enough ammunition?" We're wealthy. This young man, might as well say his name was Ensign Dye. Very unlikely that he would have a name like that and would make things live to the degree that he did. The things lived around this person. There are other persons. You give him a plant, he'd promptly go... You give somebody else a plant, and it goes... And you say, "Good God, let's get rid of that before it fills the room." You know? Just thrives. Now, when we're talking about those things, we're talking about sphere of influence, direct sphere of influence, not via MEST. This person is actually influencing MEST events, matter, energy, space, and time, one way or another. I've known a person that could never be on time for anything. even though they left 2 hours early. This person ordinarily left to take a train 2 hours early. Have the whole family sitting down in the waiting room at the depot for 2 hours before the train left. And then miss it. I said to this person once, I said, "How do you manage this?" And the person looked very thoughtful. And then came out of it all of a sudden and realized that I was coming in a little too close. Now, similarly, there are people. You see, if we're talking about the physical universe and a zone of interbulation, a body, of course, is a close-up area. And a body without much causation can simply get sick by being in such a zone. I have known nurses, much as your life was worth to have one on the case. They walk in, temperature soars. Harry Leon Wilson, Ruggles of Red Gap, one of the better old-time writers of novels and things, wrote one called "Oh Doctor," I think the name of the thing was, and he had a Black Watch Mary, I think her name was. And she comes in on the case, picks up the thermometer alongside of the bed, shoves it into the patient's mouth, takes it out, sneers, throws the thermometer in the wastebasket, takes out her own, whips it out, shoves it in his mouth, takes it out, reads it. 106. Ah, that's much better. Now, freedom from illness would then not consist of a running away from illness. It would just be a matter of no illness as a result of an interbulated zone, an area of influence. It would simply be a negative gain that far. But then there's a positive thing. This society gets so sick that it forgets something, that there is a positive good. People think that evil is positive, and only evil is positive. That's because you can kill a man so quick, and you can mock him up so slowly. And for instance, nations, which is no criteria. You can't even talk about the insane in a nation in the same breath. We'll have to censor this film and destroy it someday. I realize, because the way the world's going, why a remark like that will be considered high treason. But if they manage to hide the master and bring it out a few years later, some nation will consider it a compliment that it is not even insane. See, it's further off than that. I don't know why it is, but nations do seem to demonstrate an individuality which comes close to insanity. And you start to add up the characteristics of a nation. Do it sometime, just for sport. Add up the characteristics of a nation, what it does, and then say, what would I think of an individual if it did these things? Well, I'd throw him in the nearest clink, of course. It takes 20 years to grow a young man so that you can throw him away in a brief time in a war. That's an interesting thing, isn't it? Well, if the nation, as aberrated as it is, could mock him up, bing, you see, why, it wouldn't have this disproportion of positive good and positive evil. So you get this positive evil would not appear quite so authoritative or quite so forceful. But that you spend hours and hours making a cake and people come in and go swish, swish, and then no cake. That appears that evil has great authority, and that you have to work very, very hard to be good. Now, the harder you have to work to produce something, the less creative you are. I love these authors who spent 7 years writing a book. They tell you this to impress you with the fact that it's a good book. That's not true. It's not true. I usually tell one of these fellows, if you could just mock up the manuscript paper with all of the writing on it, that would be the finest novel ever written. They think I'm being funny. It's not true. I'm not being funny. It's an actual fact. And if you were that good at creativeness, a little thing like a plot and characterizations and witty words certainly wouldn't bother you any. In other words, there's positive good. So we get this other factor here of a zone of influence where good takes place. In other words, there's positive good here. It isn't just absence of evil. And so we get freedom from illness. We also get proof up against illness by recreation of the body member, which would become ill very rapidly. And we get such a zone. You see, there's a double thing at work here, and the modern world has lost sight of the positive aspect of good. The next thing we put down just for the multitude, because any Thetan in his right mind doesn't mind a little bit of pain. It is, after all, a sensation. And if you don't believe this, run a little process on somebody sometime, sitting down and have him say, I'll waste pain this way, waste pain that way, waste pain. All of a sudden, pain appears to be very valuable to him. You just have him go on a little bit further, have him run enforced pain for a little while, and you could, until he gets to agreeing with the society again, take his loose skin and pinch it very, very hard. And he would say, thanks. It's an interesting thing. But pain is defined a certain way, but if we define it this way, an undesirable sensation, then we have truth here in saying freedom from pain, which is freedom from an undesirable sensation. The next freedom that we could write down that Scientology would carry with it is ignorance. Ignorance contains, of course, a potential to know, doesn't it? We have the old first postulate idea. You had a native state in which Thetan knows everything, and then he has to not know the whole lot of it so that he can know something. Then he has to know a whole bunch of particulars. See, here he is, he knows everything. He has a potentiality of total knowingness, and then he has to say, I not know all of these things. Then he comes down, and he knows a whole bunch of particulars, and now, again, he not knows these particulars. This we term forgetting. And after he's got all of that suppressed, we get ignorance. Ignorance goes along with obsessive making nothing out of everything. You don't believe this, talk someday to a stupid man. Stupid people are not dangerous to have around so much as unnecessary. Now, a stupid person can do some of the weirdest things. The great revolutionaries of the world are the very, very bright and the very, very stupid. Now, you take somebody who's very, very bright, he can see these various wrongs. So he says they ought to be overthrown. And then you get somebody else who's very, very stupid, and he doesn't see any wrongs. He just fails to understand anything, wrong or right. So he says, I can understand it, therefore it is evil, and I will overthrow it. And we get a Hitlerian revolt. You know, we got to overthrow everything we do not understand. Well, this doesn't carry with it the potentiality of everything being understandable. Don't ever make that mistake. You know how people convince people they're ignorant? They take something which cannot be understood, and they say, you stupid jerk, why don't you understand this? Isaac Newton did this one time. He invented a thing called calculus. Now, people in colleges, prove they're bright by knowing calculus and knowing exactly what to do with it and exactly how to handle it and everything about calculus, and prove that other people are stupid Because the other people say, this is interesting, but does it have any real use? Or can't it be done some other way? You get the idea. Now, calculus is not a really flagrant example. Let's go upstairs now into something that is drawing big pay from the government at every side. Let's take psychology. These people say, there is a subject here. And then people rush in and say, well, teach me a little bit of it. Then they say, oh, well, it takes years and years and years to understand anything about it. And, of course, you're very stupid because you don't understand anything about it. But it takes so many years to understand something about it. And this way, nobody ever finds out there's nothing there. You get what a nice trick that is. It's an interesting trick. The first thing a science of mind should be able to do is to change minds. A science should have a control of an area. The science of physics certainly can change a lot of things within its zone. It expects to be effective. And when we say science, then we have some connotation of effectiveness. And I suppose there can be an esoteric science which is not effective at all and which doesn't treat of anything. But it would only be an honest one if it said so. Don't ever make the mistake of believing that you are ignorant simply because you do not understand a non-comprehensible. Because that's the oldest trick in the universe. When I'm talking about ignorance, I'm talking about a very mechanical thing. I'm talking about the fellow who refuses to know what he has already found out. Now, he's ignorant. He's stupid. This fellow already knows that he'll only get one body this lifetime. They're rationing them very thinly at this time. Have you noticed that? Very thin rations on bodies. You're supposed to make one last one whole lifetime. Well, this fellow knows this. He knows he isn't going to get another body. So he jumps into a car and goes tearing down the highway, drives on both sides of the roads, comes to a dangerous intersection, times it so as to cross it at the same time with a truck. Comes out of the hospital, jumps into a car, drives down the road, and times it so as to touch it at the same time as a truck. Comes out of the hospital, gets into a car, drives down the road, hits a dangerous intersection, and crosses the same time as the truck. That fella's stupid. Given the fact that he'll only get one body and that he wants a body, given that fact, then we get stupidity. Now, of course, if he's merely after... If his goal, essentially, is the destruction of all bodies, all cars, and all trucks, then he's being a howling success. And in his own rights, could be considered very intelligent. He knows how to make it intersect with a truck every time, and that takes some doing. Now, wherever we have ignorance, we generally have the remainder of things that man considers bad. One of the first and foremost of them is ignorance. You have to have almost a willful ignorance before you have a hopeless case. Now, IQ is not necessarily intelligence or brilliance or smartness. Jan told me about a professor one day. He said, this professor said that IQ was what the test measured, which I think is very good. Because essentially in Dianetics, it's the original thesis. It gives the purpose of the mind in there. A brief form of it is to pose and resolve problems relating to survival. A mind's ability to pose problems, perceive problems, resolve those problems, of course, would be your first and foremost test of whether or not the fellow was not ignorant. We don't know what intelligent is, but we know what ignorant is. And we can put a test up here that says he's not ignorant by so many points. You get the idea? That's about all we can test. We can test this potential. Now, a clear, of course, has to be out of this zone of ignorance. 135, I think, is... some people have told me lately that that's genius. Although I used to consider it college average. I used to think that ought to be. And then I met some college boys of this generation, and I found out it wasn't college average anymore. So we'll say it's genius. I've been invalidated there. 135 is a pretty darn high IQ. Now, I found something very peculiar about people who have 135 and above. I found out they don't have any real difficulty in communicating. That's because they are not in the dark about what we are communicating. But people who are below 80 have an awful lot of trouble trying to find out what you're talking about, and most of your discussion with them concerns definition of what you're discussing. You keep saying, the car needs washing. And they say, the car. And you say, yes, the car. It's out there in the driveway, and there it is, and so on. You finally, a lot of conversations, so-called, and you get this car out there, all right. You got that located, and then you say, there, you better get a bucket. And they say, why? You say, well, the car needs washing. And they say, washing. Here we go, see? So that your, quote, communication with these people is simply Voltaire's, if you would argue with me, you must define your terms. Well, all you do with these people is define objects. You just go on endlessly talking about what you were talking about without ever talking about it. You never get anywhere beyond the point of that. Now, you've known such people. Very often, a boy or girl in his or her teens will conceive this of the parents of the family. They conceive the parents to be very, very stupid, mostly because they can never hold a conversation. What they miss is this. The parents might have been stupid in their own sphere, or they might have been smart, but they are certainly educated into one frame of reference, and their powers of observation grasp certain values that apply to their age bracket. And the teenager has entirely different sets of values for the same apparent scenery. The parents look at a car. The boy looks at a hot rod. Same vehicle. The boy never sees the car properly put together. He sees the thing properly stripped down with enough goodies in it. And he says, why are you driving that old heap? And in view of the fact that it's comfortable, gets to work, gets back, it is what the neighbors also own, which makes it correct. It's the correct tie, the correct chapeau, the correct gown used to be society's basic discussion point. And now it's the correct car, the correct ranch type. You know, they're wearing cars now. And you get different viewpoints. But a person who is very bright can shift his viewpoint with speed. He realizes he's talking to a teener. He picks it up at once that the teener is not talking about a car, the teener is talking about a hot rod. He's not talking about performance in terms of comfort. He's talking performance in terms of zing. He's not talking about smoothness of motor. He's talking about loudness of motor. I know I ran into this the other day with Mary Sue. She's hoping that they hadn't put a muffler on a new speedboat. It sounded so lovely. Well, now, her idea of it sounding lovely was crack, 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 crack. The least it sounded like was the cannonade that preceded the Battle of Waterloo. I thought it was a nice sound myself. But The boat people came down and put a muffler on it, and now all the sound is inside the cockpit, so it deafens you if you ride in it. But anyway, a person who is, this word intelligent, this word smart, these words all have connotations. We really don't have a word to determine brilliance. Because it's not really defined. There haven't been enough bright people around for anybody to notice what brightness was. But it's a matter of being able to identify, this is one test of it, identify what's happening, what's going on, and what the objects are all about, and what they mean to the other fellow. Intelligence, then, isn't something, as a psychologist would have you believe, that is innately implanted here, just a 1/16 of a millimeter on the other side of the medulla oblongata. It doesn't apply to just the person. It's a second-party thing. In other words, it's the ability to know what the other fellow's thinking. You get the idea? And only in that way can intelligence be demonstrated or conversation or communication be held. You have to have some perception of what the rest of the world is all about. Well, this also then requires tolerance, requires perception, observation, requires an awful lot of things. A fellow has to be able to look and identify for himself and look and identify for the other fellow in order to communicate. That's just one factor of intelligence. It's not a first dynamic operation at all. It's a multiple dynamic operation. I suppose if a fellow was smart enough, he would know what the Supreme Being was thinking about. But of course, if he was that smart, he'd probably be excommunicated. Anyway, the whole area here of ignorance would also be able to embrace the idea that somebody could not identify, so that you would then not keep on saying, but it's a car. It's I'm talking about washing the car. The car. The thing that's... You get the idea. I mean, he wouldn't be going downscale on a toboggan trying to communicate. And that's partially freedom from ignorance. Freedom also from the other fellow's ignorance. So he's stupid. So what? Here's a bucket of water and here's some wood. Haul and hew, fella. But of course the ignorant can't even draw water and chop wood. That's what's remarkable to me. I went out one time, a very, very stupid fellow that was hired in the woods to woods work. And he was hired because he would work, because he was stupid. At least this is what the foreman told me. And I went out to where he was working, and I found the tree behind him had more felling axe marks than the tree in front of him. And every time he lifted this axe, he hit something with it that he didn't intend. He was working there for a little while, and he finally came up to the house, and he said to me, have you got a beach umbrella? And I said, yes, I have a beach umbrella. He said, could I borrow it? I said, all right. He borrowed it. He took it out, lugged it out into the woods. When he got out into the woods, he came back with the beach umbrella, and he says, well, the sun is so bright where there isn't any sun, but it's not so bright out in the woods. And I never have been able to figure that out to this day. There's no reason to go on worrying about it. I abandoned it years ago. He made a little bit of chaos where I was concerned. I found out he had the rest of the crew on their ears. And the rest of the crew in that logging area kept begging the foreman to fire him before he killed somebody. They'd tell him to light up the boiler in the morning, you know, so he'd stuff it full of straw, and he'd stuff it full of straw, and he'd stuff it full of straw, and next thing you know, he had a small forest fire going. didn't light the boiler, he lit the forest. This was an interesting case. Now, we go a little bit further when we talk about clearing. We get another zone, which is very important. A person who is very bright in the determination that I've been talking about brightness, who's very bright, a person who is very, very intelligent, seems to make other people brighter. Now, that's an interesting fact. So that you're pretty good. You're pretty good, and you move in on this zone, this area, and there's some other people there, and these other people are all interpolated about some horrible puzzle, and they can't seem to figure out which way you shift into low or something of the sort. You show up, you don't show them, but they shift into low. Ever notice anything like this? That's zone of influence in terms of brightness. Well, I wouldn't go so far as to say that if more people were brighter, more people would be brighter. But it's the truth. If more people were brighter, then more people than that would become mysteriously brighter. I knew one girl one time. She was married to a writer. He was a very, very brilliant writer. He was a tremendous boy. Well, you've seen one of his pictures, Destination Moon. This guy's real bright, Bob Heinlein. Anyway, Bob had the horrible effect upon people of making them very bright. They get around Bob, they talk to Bob for a little while, next thing you know, they'd be bright. You know? And young writers and so forth were always coming around to get it rubbed off on them a little bit, you know? And he was married to a girl. Boy, was she bright. Oh, she just sharper than a tack. And then, unfortunately, due to the fortunes of war and a few other things, he wasn't married to her anymore. I ran into her, and you talk about a stupid person. Boy, was she stupid. And she lived the rest of her life just that stupidly, and she didn't live very long either. But there was a fantastic little test of things. About the brightest person you ever met was that girl, as long as she was in the location of a very bright person. You see that? Now, that doesn't mean that everybody is bright because they're in the area of some bright person. God forbid. If you're not bright in your own right, you'll never be free from ignorance. But you can make a person bright in his own right by clearing rather easily. IQ on old-time processing used to go up at the rate of 1 point per hour of processing, just as neat as you please. If you tested it, and it was good processing, it went up at the rate of 1 point per hour. Now, there are some techniques which aren't necessarily part of clearing at all. They have to do with withholding, running various types of withholding, and running it in various ways, but you can shoot people's IQ up at about 5 points an hour. Rather fabulous. But this is their own brightness that they're acquiring, not anybody else's, you see. But freedom from ignorance would be basically freedom from liability because of the ignorance of others. Therefore, you wouldn't have to totally depend upon the tolerance of the world to live in it. It becomes very important. The last part of these freedoms here is the most controversial of them all. This little thing I have not talked about for some years. Death. I've just not talked about it very much. Scientologists, though, have developed a considerable awareness of what this is all about. They have a good grip on the situation. We aren't good enough yet so that we can overthrow this critter and dispense with it entirely, or to pick up one of our friends after he's disappeared down this chute or route. But this phenomena depends totally upon fixation of identity in terms of bodies. If a body is an identity, then death defeats us in costing us our friends, don't you see? Until we have overcome death, we will still lose friends. That's for sure. There are many people, not many, there are only about five, that I wish were here today in the flesh, because I like them. They're good people. And they've gone off to the four quarters of somewhere. Now, these people comprise a very low mortality rate for as many people as there are in Scientology. They comprise a very low mortality rate. But they nevertheless have disappeared, about five of them over the period, long period of time here. Several of them, very dear friends of mine, and very, very missed. Now, the conquest with death is a personal thing. They had not developed the facility, and this is not really part of being clear, but they had not developed the facility to perpetuate their identity in the absence of an identified body. That's the only trick. Now, we're really talking about something awfully esoteric, aren't we, when we talk about this? We're talking about something exotic. We're talking about something that is magic, far beyond, that sort of thing. One of the first things a fellow realizes with great clarity on the road up is that he is not his body. And as he realizes this more and more, we can see that a new thing would take place. I'll go into that in a moment. But all recognition and all freedom begins with the individual. That's a horrible thing to have to face, because it tells us that the individual is the beginning point of any realization. And after that, there is no sense in talking about the masses. When people are really licked, they talk about the masses. When they are whipped, when they don't know where they're going or what they're doing, they talk about the masses. They talk about people. I don't know any people. I know a person. But I'll tell you this, that a person who fixates on the masses has failed to communicate somewhere along the line with one person, and ever afterwards is putting out a generalized communication hoping it'll reach that person. He failed to communicate to Mama. Every time he said, "Mama, can I shut up?" You know, some lady-like rebuttal. Later on, he decides that he's going to communicate to the masses. Why? He hopes in some circuitous fashion that the communication on a via will get around and get to the old lady after all. You got that? You'll find that people who are fixated on the masses cannot talk to the individual. Now, you want to watch one of these boys. You want to watch yourself, because you become a dangerous person when this happens to you. That when you can talk to many and also talk to one, and when you can sell somebody out of his eye teeth individually, vis-a-vis, and when you can also talk to a group, you become a dangerous person. The world at large recognizes this. The American government today likes nothing worse than people who are in charge of groups, leaders of groups. They think However, they are usually victimizing only people who are talking to masses. They're not dangerous. They're not really dangerous at all, because they never communicate to a person. I never saw a mass of people sit down to read a book. Yeah. Have you? This not happened at all. So therefore, we have to start with the one. We start with a basic unit of you-ness, the basic unit of you, before we start anywhere. I'd like to draw you this little picture of the dynamics. We've talked about these freedoms. We talked about freedom from death. Well, freedom from death depends in a large degree upon this graph. Now, I've never shown you this graph before. I talked about it in Los Angeles, I think, in the fall of 50, and then came right off of it. It's the eight dynamics. The eight dynamics, very easy to enumerate, simply consists of self, which is the urge towards survival of oneself, sex, the urge towards survival through sex, the second dynamic, the third dynamic, group, fourth dynamic, mankind, urge towards survival through, fifth, the animal kingdom or the world of bodies or bodies in general, urge to survival through bodies, sixth, the physical universe, urge towards survival through the physical universe, seven, which is the dynamic of the spirit, which is the urge towards survival through the spirit, and eight, which is merely infinity, and we turn it right side up and we get eight. You can call that supreme being or anything else you have found out about it. Now, here's a peculiarity on these eight dynamics. They're a matter of reach. They're a matter of sphere of influence. They're a matter of reach. Here is the first dynamic. A person who would only be on the first dynamic would have this area of reach of merely self. But don't think that's a bad thing. You've been educated, some of you, to believe the thought of self and awareness of self and all that sort of thing is a very bad thing. You should think of the other fellow, never of you, and that sort of thing. Now we're talking about below the line. Well, let's go on up here rapidly. Here's your second dynamic, third dynamic, fourth dynamic, fifth dynamic, sixth dynamic, seventh dynamic, and out here, of course, is your eighth. Now, this is very fascinating. Your first dynamic here has to be real. Now, up above this line, this is a matter of reach, don't you see? We're talking about reach. We're talking about how far an individual can go, not necessarily in terms of space, but how far his influence exists. And we talk about this first dynamic, we say, well, he can influence himself pretty well. Well, we probably mean body and so forth. Out here is be your second dynamic. Well, what about the second dynamic? Well, he could control that pretty good. He'd really be something. The third dynamic up here, the handling of groups, this becomes a little more rare, but can be done. That is handling a number of first dynamics. We get up here to fourth. We're merely talking about handling that species to which he belongs. If we were talking about the fourth dynamic of cockroaches, we'd be talking about all the cockroaches that are in this universe. We happen to be talking about physical bodies of human beings, so we're not talking about cockroaches. Now, this fourth dynamic merely means body of the species. Fifth dynamic would be all life forms. That's your combination of life plus material objects making body forms. And this would be trees and grass and all the rest of that. All right, there's your command there. And your sixth dynamic would be the physical universe. And here's your seventh dynamic. It would be all of the spiritual world on this last circle. And then outside that, you've got an infinity. And you've got 2, 3, 4, 5, 6... 7, 8, minus. We've also got a minus 1. Where does the average person sit in this community or this society today? You don't think for a moment he's totally aware of himself, do you? If he did, he would be able to influence his whole history and everything else. He'd be a natural clear. And there aren't very darn many of them. His zone of influence and so forth, just around himself, he would become so darn notable that just, whoa, gee, you know. So people are at least at minus one. You know, well, I don't amount to much. I'm nobody. You know how it is. Erase. I know I won the trophy, but I slipped, you know. Negation of self. All right, now let's walk downhill here. And we see minus second. Well, this individual is inhibited sexually. That's enough to put him on a minus second. That's enough. He read Freud once. Finish. minus third. He thinks of groups as masses, not as firsts. He knows what a group is. It's a mass. That's the way you define it. But how about this fellow at minus four who was talking about mankind? A little boy runs up to him and says, "Daddy, can I have a nickel?" "Get away, you little brat. Mankind has got to be saved." "Get away from here." Get the idea. He's not upstairs on any of these dynamics above him, but mankind. This is a weird deal. Get thinking this over. He's just going on in avoidance. The further we go south, the more he's avoiding the things just north of him, you see? These things up here to the north from the south are beyond his ken. And as he goes down here to minus six, nuclear physicist, he never looks at it, but he says, "There's something in it. I know there's something in it. If I combine enough stuff this way, and move it this way, and move it like this way, if I talk about that, it'll go boom! And there will be no fifth, no fourth, no third, no second. Hooey!" So we actually have your divisions here of constructive and destructive. A person who's in very good shape can construct and destroy. But persons who can only destroy are certainly below this line. And persons who can construct, and gradually as we go up, we get them also destroy too. But they can do this at analytical choice, are above this line. Now we get then negative dynamics, and this is the way they are laid out. And where do people normally exist on these negative dynamics? It's very interesting, but they're somewhere around there. Antisocial. You have to get somebody up the line up here. At least get him sexually inhibited. Freud undoubtedly improved the whole society. You have to get enough of him there so he can make nothing out of it before he can find himself. Judgment, which is an OT subject, which we'll be talking about in the next ACC, actually consists of, I've been searching for years for what judgment is how many and what side dynamics does a person compute on instantly? That's judgment. If an individual computes on the first dynamic only, he's got more judgment than most people. Now, if he can compute when he thinks of a solution to an automobile accident or something like that, he thinks in terms of 1, 2, 3, 4. You know, and that's his solution. It embraces that many positive dynamics. Okay, but if it embraces that many negative dynamics, you can peg him about where he sits. And then you can tell him after that what he hates, what he's trying to get rid of, what he's fleeing from, and so forth, and where his obsessions lie. It's quite interesting. That is judgment. It's how many dynamics he can simultaneously compute on. But that isn't really what we're covering here. What we're trying to cover here is the fact that as an individual goes up, here he is running away from the world, and up here, he is reaching into the world. And the further an individual can reach, the more he can control. And if an individual is totally aware of himself as an immortal being, he has not yet come up to a point where he can make somebody else aware that he of himself, without a body, is an immortal being. And then we get up here to the third, on the subject of death. So death, perhaps, is just a little bit beyond the scope of clear. But death is certainly at the first dynamic, and the individual would be free from death. These are the four freedoms that we're talking about here today, and they actually do pose a new view of society. And without anybody inventing a new society, if you look this over and thought of a society free from these things, you might ask yourself two questions. What'll we do for a game? I think we could dream that up if we were this good. And the other one is, what would a society look like? How much security there would there be, and wouldn't people be a little bit happier in it? We can ask that question And whether you answer yes or no is beside the point, because you have total freedom of choice to be as bad off as you want. All we're talking about here is that a person shouldn't be forced to be bad off. Now, therefore, the gate opens, and the gate opens certainly on these things, and many, many more that we wouldn't really be able to embrace in a very fast rundown. The next lectures that I'm going to give you are going to immediately concern the techniques, how you bring an auditor up to being able to run techniques, and the techniques themselves with their present-day auditing commands, which do make clear. And I hope that you appreciate the information. It has some slight value. Thank you.